Session number 12012.
Double Pickering reel 4.
Yes, we got into these trucks, crowds of partisans, myself, Millard. By then, with another fellow had come called Cromack. He dropped the day before they entered Asti. And a fellow called, a corporal by the name of Lane, we used to call him Shady Lane, he came with us, and we got into the trucks and drove into Turin. We got to the outskirts at Superga. There was a bit of shooting going on. Largely the shooting there was the partisans shooting fascists and then burying them in the gardens of a great big mansion there. I don't know what it, where it was or who it belonged to, but they were burying fascists with their arms and their legs showing above the ground, just flinging earth over them and letting their arms stick out. And then as we moved into Turin itself in the town, there was all sorts of firing going on. I don't think casualties were very, very high, but certainly amongst the partisans they weren't very high. But Turin's a bit of a city, something like a... They have boulevards, and we were behind the post firing up at these fascists that were in the high buildings firing down on us. And every so often there'd be screams, or someone, the partisans would rush a building and get upstairs and grab them and hang them. I've seen them lying dead in the street there, or they'd hang somebody on a lamppost. And this went on for 24 hours. There'd be a few trucks of cars running around the streets firing machine guns like gangsters. But that soon died down, and the next day I can remember the first Allied troops coming into town, and the first ones I met were South Africans, and then Americans, and the Americans were Japanese. The local Italians couldn't get over this, because it was a Japanese battalion of Americans that came in. After that, we set up a wireless station in the house of the chief, the Fiat chief, Agnelli, and set up this wireless station back to Siena then. Number one Special Force had moved up to Siena. And I remained there for a few weeks, and then I was sent back to Siena. And afterwards, I was posted to the Royal Signals at Naples, because SOE had then started to disband. They didn't want us anymore, we'd done our job. I had volunteered to go to Japan, because SOE were operating from Ceylon, as it was known then, it's now Sri Lanka, and they'd operated, had sent agents into Malaya, and I volunteered for that. In fact, quite a few of us volunteered. One of the main reasons we volunteered was we'd heard that they gave us bags of gold sovereigns for currency. we thought we'd get hold of a few. But it didn't come off because they dropped the atom bomb, and that finished the war.
During this liberation of Turin, do you think that it was a question of dealing with the fascists there, or just paying off personal scores sometimes?
Oh, no, I don't think... I don't recall any incidents of personal scores at all. I think it was just dealing with fascists. Fascist diehards who didn't want to give up and wanted to fight to the last. There were a few diehards there who just continued firing until the end.
Did it surprise you that they should have fought to the death?
No, not really. I think if people have certain principles, they would, no matter who they were. Just the same way, I mean, we might castigate the SS, or we might not like them for what they did to various people. But nevertheless, there were undoubtedly lots of them who fought to the bitter end. You can't say anything about their ultimate courage when the time came. I don't think that's disputed at all, and I think the same applied to some of the fascists.
How dangerous was it for you during this fighting in Turin?
Well, I suppose I thought it was dangerous at the time. I thought it was dangerous enough not to walk about too freely, to dodge behind the walls of the boulevards, the arches of the boulevards. I didn't expose myself too much, just in case one of the bullets did get you, I'd say it soon died down.
What did you think personally of the revenge taken against the girls who were said to have collaborated?
Well, you didn't know much about that, really. As I say, you just saw the people. I didn't speak to any of them or anything like that. You'd think it was a bit merciless, really. I mean, shaving people's head. It isn't the sort of thing I could imagine any of our troops doing to any girls or anything like that. But then again, when you get people of the same race, like Italian against Italian, I think they're inclined to show more animosity and more bitterness and hatred towards each other than they are to other nationalities under those circumstances.
Do you mean that the Italian partisans disliked the
yes,
fascists
yes.
more than the Germans?
Yes, yes. Although they certainly, as far as the Italian partisans were concerned, certainly the ones that I knew, the autonomous divisions in northwest Italy, who were largely Alpini, ex-Alpini, had no fear of the Germans at all. And they gave as good as they took from the Germans, if not more. In fact, the Germans were terrified of coming out at night. They just wouldn't come out at night because they knew they would catch it if they did. It's a remarkable thing that the Italian partisans largely cleared Italy of Germans and fascists without any high Allied casualties. I don't think the Allies suffered many casualties at all when they entered the richest part of Italy, the Po Valley. Because I can't recall any great battles. The Germans were packed up. Divisions of them surrendered there. And the Italian partisans actually occupied the towns before the Allies arrived. So they didn't have any fighting to do. Certainly not in Asti and Turin.
Did you think that the communist partisans were going to succeed in setting up a communist system?
No, I don't think so, because there were largely six political parties concerned with partisans in northern Italy. The communists were a very large group, the Garibaldini they were known as. There were the Matteotti Socialists, the Democratic Christian Socialists, the Party of Action, the Justice and Liberty Party, and the Autonomous Divisions. I was with the Autonomous Divisions, who were non-political. But having said that they were non-political, they were definitely anti-left wing. I wouldn't say they were extreme right wing, but they were definitely anti-communist. And if they could deprive the communists of any arms, they would do, because communists did say that they wanted to keep arms for the revolution after the war. And I've no doubt that a lot of the communists would have had a revolution if they could have got away with it. But although they were the largest single party in Italy at the time, I think the alliance of all the others against them was far too much for them to have succeeded.
Did you yourself get involved in the politics between the partisans?
No. Only at times the communists would complain to the British liaison officers that they weren't getting any of the armaments. And I think, in fact, I've got a great suspicion that a lot of the liaison officers, the British liaison officers, made sure that the communists didn't get too many of the arms. I'm sure they tried their best to see they didn't get them. They'd give them some, obviously, but a lot of the partisan groups were very, very good partisans. But they didn't let them have too much. Because they'd have had the lot if they could have got hold of it. The communists would have had no qualms about taking all the armaments that were sent them and letting the other partisans do without.
What did you think of the supplies that were dropped in?
I think they were pretty good under the circumstances, because later on, as partisans got to control more areas, it became easier to accept drops without fear of the Germans, and I've already mentioned the Germans wouldn't come out at night. Then we were able to, in fact, I would say, in the part that I was in the Asti-Turin area, I would say that we had a surplus of arms, that we had as much as we needed of arms, ammunition and an explosive, machine guns. We had as much as we needed. We didn't need any more. Certainly every partisan had his own personal weapon. And we had bazookas and Piats, machine guns, brain guns, Sten guns, plenty.
Could you form any opinion about the political feelings or the attitudes towards the war of the civilians in the areas in which you were operating?
They were... I don't know whether a lot of them were very strongly anti-fascist to begin with. They were certainly anti-German. They didn't like the Germans. They seemed to resent the Germans. And like all political parties, that the party in the ascendancy, the people in the ascendancy, quite often get supporters who I don't think they would get under normal circumstances. I know Max Salvadori once gave a talk, he was doing a discussion with some partisans, and he was asked how much support do you think they would get? And he said 700 if we were doing badly. In other words, there were 700 men of high principle, of partisans, who would fight tooth and nail against fascism. He said if things were 50-50 and they stood a chance, he'd get 7,000 on their side. He said if they were certain to win, you'd get 70,000 committed partisans. And I think this is apparent with hindsight, when you look at places like Germany and Italy, where you don't find any fascists and you don't find any ex-Nazis. They're not there. Only a few will admit to it. And yet, history shows that 94% of the Germans voted for the Nazis. I think if people are doing well, they'll tend to vote for or support the people that are in charge of them, that are apparently doing the right things that make them do well. Just as the same as you get a political party in this country. If the country is on a good footing and everything's going smoothly, people will vote. And yet, vote for that party that's in charge. And yet, 3 months later, if things are going badly, they'll vote for the other side. Hence, you've got this switching about all the time. You get the polls will tell you this. One minute, one party's 10 points ahead. The next minute, the other party's 10 points ahead. And people largely look to their own thing, what's good for them at the time.
Was it just men with the partisans, or did they have women?
Women as well. Obviously not in such large numbers.
What did they do?
They were very, very good, actually. They used to act as couriers. They would take messages across German-infested country from one partisan band to the other. They would carry explosives. We had one, Lucia Testori, who regularly used to go on a bicycle with explosives strapped round her waist on a bicycle and take explosives from one person to another, or one group of partisans to another. and should take a chance on being stopped by the enemy.
Did the partisans mostly come from the towns or the rural areas?
There were a mixture. You see, in a place like the main town there, apart from Cisterna itself, was a small town called San Damiano. And it was called the San Damiano Brigade. The next small town was Canale. There was the Canale Brigade. And there was the Asti Brigade. Well, I would say Asti was a town. They provided quite a good big brigade. San Damiano was a country town, a rural area virtually, yet they could provide a brigade, and the majority of the males within that town, if they were not partisans, were active supporters of the partisans.
What kind of people joined the fascists?
I think, you see, when I was there, they were not joining the fascists. They were already in the fascist forces, and a lot of them had been conscripts. How many of them had been volunteers or not, I wouldn't know before then. Certainly the officers were fascists, largely. But the other ranks, I think, were largely conscripts, who, given the choice of the two, would probably go to the partisans, if they thought the partisans were in the ascendancy. I mean, I think they took the easy way out. It's a bit like national service, I think. They don't want national service, but if they had to go, they'd go.
Did your wireless equipment work properly, or did you have any problems?
I never had any difficulties, and I wasn't a technical man. I used a B3 set, a B2 set, and it was a very good set. A suitcase radio. Very good. As I say, technically I wasn't very good. I was one of these sort of people that, if anything goes wrong, I give it a kick, first of all.
And you didn't have any problems?
No. No, I was in communication the whole time.
What kind of a man is Salvadori?
Gentleman. Very, very
Still.
Nice. Pardon?
Still?
Yes, he's a very, very nice person. Man of very high principles. Very well educated, university man. And, as I say, for a man who will stick his neck out and go to prison for his beliefs, at the time we're talking about, before the war, it must be a man of pretty strong principle. And he certainly is.